You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 17th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the set of Travel Ban 2, Ban Harder. It's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Hi, Drift Glass.
Hey, Darla. How you doing?
Oh, it's been a tough week. I've had a lot going on with kids' prescriptions, and I think there's kind of a either work slowdown or let's just mess with everybody. They're certainly messing with me and my kids deal at the Medicaid office. And so, and part of it, I know, is that, and I think I've mentioned this before, like a lot of states, Illinois has outsourced the management of their Medicaid program to a company.
Yes.
Do sort of managed care. It's like an HMO.
Right.
And because the state doesn't have a budget, basically the company has stopped paying doctors and hospitals. And
Anything.
So hospitals, both hospitals in Springfield and all of the doctor's offices that my kids attend have stopped taking that insurance.
Right.
And fortunately, I mean, the deal is that there are women working at these places who are mothers.
Yeah. And
so I've gotten really proactive phone calls and letters from employees at these places saying, you need to switch over to regular Medicaid, and we're going to take you off of this managed care company. You can go back on state Medicaid, which we don't know when they're going to pay us because there's no budget, right?
Right.
And some of this is mandated. I mean, everything that's being paid in the state of Illinois is because there's a court order to pay it.
Yeah. There's
that's
no
how,
budget.
That's how things are being paid.
Now.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how that's working out with hospitals and so forth. I do know that the headline in today's paper was that the governor of Illinois had the guts, or the gall, as I would put it, to ask the General Services Administration how many replacement workers will be needed when the strike happens.
Yep.
And because the employees there knew not to say, fuck you, they just said, we don't know.
I'm thinking maybe five. I think that's right.
The answer was, we don't know.
Yeah. Because the last time this happened, the state government had 11 people in it because it was 1870.
Yeah.
So,
this is going to be ugly. And if there is a statewide strike of state workers, some people are going to get hurt by that. And that's...
Yes.
The thing is, when I have these problems with the kids' prescriptions, you are always there to sort of know the tense pit of my stomach anxiety attack I have. And the two of the children are on ADHD medication that they need for school. And I feel this week like I've just been jerked around because...
I have.
And junior dude is over 18, so his needed special, you know, double secret probation approval, which we finally, at first, that he's supposed to get this number of milligrams. Well, they put 18 on the number of milligrams, which it's not, that's not his milligram, that's his age. And then, so that had to go back and forth between the pediatrician and the pharmacy again. So that delayed, and he was out of pills. So, I mean, it just, and this went on Wednesday. It was last Wednesday that I had the prescription. And we didn't get the prescription filled until Tuesday of this week, I think it was.
And
that was just because no one would pay for it. And these pills are $100 for five. I mean, it's a $500 prescription every month.
Right.
And that's out of pocket. Now, the Medicaid price for that is $280 or something like that. So, I mean, it's just crazy. So then this is the punchline. There is a punchline to this. Number one, the medication that Junior Dude takes was approved. Then when I put in the prescription for youngest child this week, it's the same medication that was approved for Junior Dude. And they rejected it and said, no, she can't have that anymore. And I'm like, wait, you just approved it for, and it's a lower dosage, so it should be cheaper. And she's under 18, so it should be covered, right? Oh, no, no, they rejected it. They're not going to pay for that anymore. So you're going to have to change medications. And so then again, I'm so grateful. The doctor's office and the pharmacy got together. They're talking to each other. They're figuring out what will be covered. But they have to go through the Medicaid office, and that takes 72 hours to get approval on anything. And both of them are working to try to figure out what will be approved. So when they write the prescription, it's already set and will go through on the insurance. And I'm so grateful to them for that. But I'm sitting here with a child who's out of pills.
Right.
I mean, I've had people offer me, like, I can pay for your kid's pills for the month if you need it. Which prescription is it going to be? And the bureaucracy of that. And what happens next month and so forth. And the thing that gets me, and this is where Driftglass sort of wants to put a box around me and say, no, Bluegal, don't. Fran, don't drag this out and make this a universal problem. But that's the way my brain goes, which is, as you know, I have my ducks in a row. I have the prescription numbers. I have their social security numbers. I have their insurance card numbers. Everything's in a folder. I know where everything is. I know what their dosage is.
You know the names of all the nurses and the names of the doctor.
Doctor's office on speed dial. I have two master's degrees. I have a podcast. I put out a show every week. I know how to write a letter to my congressman, et cetera. I have all of these skills. I am so rich in terms of my privilege that I know what to do. You know, I know how to do things. And I sit in my car in the driveway going through this, coming home without a prescription in hand, which was what I was supposed to have.
Right.
And I sob. And I'm sobbing not just for myself and my kid. I'm sobbing for thousands of moms who have two jobs in retail and work in a gas station and are on Medicaid and food stamps, and their kids have free lunch, and they don't have all of the resources that I have to deal with this, and are at the mercy of Donald Trump
and
his budget director. And watching this today, just again, I just think, this is not even to reduce the deficit. It's not to solve a problem. They are not trying to solve a problem.
No.
They are pushing a philosophy that people are not worth it.
Right.
Human beings are not worth it.
Feeding people, feeding children is not really cost effective.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's like, no, there's no profit at the end of this. There's no outcome other than poop.
You know, it's
feeding children in school, which today we were told is not necessarily directly tied to their successful outcomes in education.
Mm-hmm.
And as Brother Charlie Pierce wrote on the Twitter, food, how does it work?
I'm laughing so I don't cry, because I will cry at this point.
Well, let me tell you about my meeting today. Because I have many meetings.
You have meetings all the time, and they're always with community activists. Let's just say that.
I have a little gig here and a little gig there, and believe me, I do. I work in the gig economy. I never wanted to. This was not my intention. This is not how I planned my life. I'm on plan R at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, like Bluegal, I'm blessed. I'm lucky. I have skills.
All of it is paid work, folks. I mean, some of this, he walks in and he is having a meeting, not because some boss somewhere told him to, but because some community activist wants to pick his brain.
Yeah, and we need to know how to do this, and nobody has any money.
I think in 2008 you thought that all of this networking would at some point get you a full-time paid position.
Yeah.
And now you and I are just like, no, this is your life.
This is my life.
Going and figuring out how to help other people assemble a program, a process, help a group of people,
put together a fucking magazine. You know, I could do all of these bizarrely.
Freezing.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not because anybody I deal with is ungenerous. It's that they're all at the mercy of the same economic forces. And they're all trying to help somebody else. That's the part that makes it worthwhile. So I'm meeting with a small group of traders this morning.
Mm-hmm. Traitors. Yes.
You know, bad dudes. You know, bad hombres. Bad hombres and nasty ladies. That's who everybody was there was one of them.
And all of you are co-signing one another's Soros checks, right? That's right. Really what exactly. It's all about, right? Okay.
And we're trying to pass $1 around fast enough so it becomes an economic engine. but we're trying to figure out how to get people work.
Yeah.
People who are, you know, especially in the toughest neighborhoods in the town where we live. And what do they need?
Yeah.
You know, and let's not be, because this is not a monochromatic group. There's there are people there who know all the spectrums and are familiar with the African-American community here and the white community here. And so it's not exactly, you know, we're not operating in the dark.
Right.
But what does this community need? And one of the things that came up, because there's all these sort of partial programs out there, they're partially funded to get you halfway there. You know, build half a bridge. What good is that? Well, it's useless.
It's all you're going to get right now. Yeah. So let's take it. Yeah, you don't say no to anything, right?
No. You move the ball forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. And one of the skill sets that we were talking about, and this I attribute directly to my wife, is navigators.
Yeah.
People, because what's coming down the pipe, first of all, there is currently government money on the table that is not being claimed. People who deserve food stamps and don't get it. People who should be taking advantage of programs that are designed to help them, and they don't do it because they just don't have it in them to navigate these giant, scary bureaucracies that are set up oftentimes not to be customer friendly.
Right. Right.
One of the extremely valuable skill sets of that for that community would be some navigators.
Yeah. Yeah.
People who can just help you. And this is called community organizing, and I realize that, but can help you navigate the social service offices, help you write your congressman, help you talk to government. I have no trouble at all. Believe me, I have no trouble at all talking to my elected representative.
Right, right.
They know me by my first name.
They do. Hadriff Glass. They don't say Hadriff Glass on.
Believe me, I am the elected representatives know who I am. I'm not a mysterious, you know, cloaked figure. I am active in my community. And I don't have any trouble doing that. I can find things out. I have no trouble asking questions. But there are people who are just frankly terrified of it. And helping them navigate. And here's what becomes really important, because and this is where we segue into the proper podcast portion of our show, which is kind of a hard sentence to say, the proper podcast portion of our program. By the way, which is sponsored again by some lovely people, Dukakis Khakis, which are extremely sensible men's pants for senseless times, although they're not so good for running it. And of course, Croc Blockers, bad fashion choice alert system, brought to you exclusively by the Cornfield Enterprises. Croc Blockers, hey man, don't wear those shoes.
That's right.
But you know what? We also have McGuffin's Muffins, our stalwart McGuffin's Muffins, who are always with us. They've been with us since the start. We'd like to welcome a new sponsor this week, Triffid's Flowers. Triffid's Flowers, delivery is free, but you won't like it. So we are conquering the podcast
world. We love our sponsors, and we love the people out there who support us. And thank you for doing that. Thank you for using our Amazon link. Thank you for sending money by mail. Thank you for using our PayPal link. And, keeping us going, because the reason we do this show every week is because we need you right back. And
we do.
If I had a, you know, 30-second spot for you guys out there who we love so much, it would say, the slogan would be, we need you right back. So,
you know what we should do? We should get a sponsor to put our guests on, put our people on.
Okay. In my spare time, I'll get right on that. You know, I'm such a marketing genius.
Get on that. You notice how good I am about tossing the ball downfield for someone else to catch. You know, Luke, now here are several good ideas that someone should take care of.
Yep. You know, you came up with a six-sided die that if you roll it, it will come up with the story we should be talking about.
Well, I would like to segue into that, because and this is the segue from what's going on in our lives right now, which is actually directly related to.
Absolutely.
This is why policy matters.
Policy matters.
The budget that has just been released from this White House.
Budget blueprint. Yes.
Yeah, the budget blueprint. Says basically fuck you to everybody who isn't a billionaire.
Yep.
Or a millionaire or is making less than $250,000 or so. It says no more Endowment for the Arts, but no more Meals on Wheels.
That which the budget director said we can't really prove that program works.
Right. Well, it's, he said, and this is where I knew we were in trouble, because he said it was part of this CDBG thing, which has been going on for 800 years, and there's not really any demonstrable results that come out of it. I'm like, fuck you. I have worked under CDBG grants before for years. They go for all kinds of things. Now, they might be abused in places, and I'm perfectly willing to have a conversation with someone who is arguing in good faith. No one in the Trump administration is arguing in good faith.
Yeah, tell us what people. CDBG – that's not Dirt Glass Blue Gal, by the way.
No, it's not a former punk bar in New York.
Right.
That was CBGB. It's not the Bee Gees. It is a community development block grant.
Okay.
And I believe it was supplanted by the CSBG, which is something similar, but not the same.
Right.
But it's chunks of government money that go to communities to do various things. Help ex-offenders, get people off drugs, feed people. There is no outcome to feeding people other than to have them not die of starvation.
Right.
The entire idea of the school lunch program came out of World War II. Shall we tell that story real quick?
Well, it's just – it is so that you have fodder for the army that's prepared.
Yeah.
That is really it. But also, I mean, the school lunch program these days, I do want to talk a little bit about that because I have some specific information about that. The school lunch program is also to help children focus, and the school breakfast program in particular is to help people focus and not crash in the middle of the day due to blood sugar just dropping because you didn't have anything to eat. You can't focus on recording a podcast. We found out last night you cannot focus on recording a podcast on an empty stomach. So that's why we're recording on Thursday. The lunch program in Springfield, where we live, was free for some students and some pupils and not free for others. And there was a process by which they used the number of students enrolled in the free school lunch program as a way to qualify for additional money because you were a school of poverty or you had a high poverty rate in your school. And some genius, for some reason, decided that scale could not be used anymore. The agriculture department said you cannot use the school lunch program as a gauge for measuring poverty in your school. You have to use something else. You have to use something else. So what Springfield decided to do, rather than add a layer of paperwork and a layer of we're going to have to find out the incomes of every parent in the school district and record it and somehow find some other way to measure poverty, measure the incomes of our parents. They just decided, okay, well, if we can't use it for that anymore, lunches are free.
Yeah, across the
everybody.
Board. Everybody.
Across the board. Yep. The whole school district, the only places where lunches are paid for, actually, that's not true. I was going to say that the gifted magnet school pays for lunches. No, what the gifted magnet school did is because the school district says lunches are free, we got a big letter from the PTO because there are a lot of kids in the gifted magnet school whose parents are doctors or lawyers and they have funds. So the PTO sent out a letter and say, you're saving $350 a year in lunches. Send it to the PTO.
Right.
So... write a check because we are going to make sure that you don't, you know, we're not letting that money just go.
Feeding kids during the day is not exactly a challenging concept that requires proof of its efficacy.
Well, and this is something that I love about Twitter and social media is that immediately you had testimony from people who are involved in these programs. I saw multiple tweets from people, talking about being school teachers and saying, look, these are the only meals these kids get in my classroom during the day, period. They get two meals a day from school.
I'm from a family of school teachers.
Yeah.
You know, this is not – at no point – this program has been going on for, 60, 70 years.
Yep. Yep.
It arose because after the Great Depression, trying to field the army, people found out
– yeah, people had rickets. You know,
not able to be soldiers. So we're going to, and then it became an agricultural program. But the net result is there's nothing, I forget probably Churchill who said, the greatest place to, you know, store milk is in children.
Right.
The greatest use. And it's this is so mind-bendingly simple.
Well, it's so stupid. The cuts to the UN and the cuts to foreign aid, you've got people from the generals in the military saying, please don't do this.
You're making our lives infinitely harder.
We're really making it more difficult to cutting back the State Department, cutting back diplomacy. Please don't. And these school lunch programs, you have people in mayors, you know, Republican mayors, Republican, well, there aren't too many Republican, Republican governors for sure, saying, please don't do this. And don't put it on me and my state when I can't print money, I can't borrow money in a recession to feed kids. You know, if the economy tanks, there's no way I can make up that deficit. You have to put it in a system that's flexible.
Right.
And there's just no logic. There is no logic to this. But the other thing that has to be said, Driftglass. Oh, and then I heard from one follower of mine who delivers Meals on Wheels. She said, I am the only human being that some of these seniors see, period, in a day, in a 24-hour period. I am the human being who sees them and checks on them and makes sure they're still breathing. Okay. Right. I'm going to be the one that finds them dead in their house. I'm the one who makes it possible for them to be at home. They are not in the nursing home,
right,
being a burden to the Medicaid system because I visit them every day with a meal.
This is the prison argument. It's cheaper to educate a child and send that child to college than to end up with another prisoner in the for-profit prison system by orders of magnitude.
It doesn't make the right people rich. That is the only logical argument. The other thing that has to be said about this over and over and over again is that this is not Trump. This is the Republican plan. This is the is absolutely the Republican way of governing.
And always has been.
Yeah. And don't pretend that this is somehow an anomaly to the Republican Party. It is not. This is the reason they are standing behind Trump and being silent and complicit and utterly complicit is this is their fantasy come true, that they have someone who will sign this and make it happen. And we know this because the Citizens for Logical Taxation or whatever that group is called, Grover Norquist said.
Grover Norquist, awful people. Yeah.
We don't need policy writers. We just need someone to sign what we put in front of him.
Yeah, we need.
Where did they find that?
We need someone with working digits who will sign what we put in front of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is an absolute unbroken line of custody from Ronald Reagan to Donald Trump.
Yep. And don't think that Tom Price is somehow some evil person because he's Trump's guy. Because of all of them, Tom Price, the HHS person who sat there and lied to a cancer survivor about Medicaid last night.
Smiling
about how, it's because he's only one out of every three doctors won't take Medicaid. Who gives a shit? I don't care if a greedy doctor won't take Medicaid because it doesn't pay him enough. This cancer survivor standing right in front of you, Tom Price, found doctors who saved his life. And the only thing that would have blocked him from having that care is insurance. And he had Medicaid insurance that got him the help he needed. And you want to take that away because doctors are unhappy? Fuck you. But look, Tom Price would have been Jeb Bush's Health and Human Services Secretary
Absolutely.
In a heartbeat. Marco Rubio, Kasich. He would have been his. John Kasich. Every one of them would have chosen Tom Price as HHS Secretary.
He's a doctor, and
he hates Obamacare. And so he'll be my policy guy.
Because they are a cruel and heartless party. They are a cult. Mm-hmm. They are a cruel and heartless cult of very, very depraved people.
And the cult part is really important. I have thought about that since this morning when Stephanie Miller had on someone who was talking about when you take away the word
Scientology.
Scientology out of all of the Scientology literature and put in the word Republican, it all fits. And it's about deprogramming. And you can't deprogram people if they can just turn on Fox again or if they can just go to Drudge and get fed again. Their delusion.
When I have said you can't help these people, I mean that. One of the problems is all of this comes at you so fast.
Yep.
I mean, today was like three big stories. it is helpful to understand there's only six stories.
There's only six stories.
There's only six, it's like there's only 12 plots in all of fiction.
Yeah.
There's only six stories in the news today that you need to pay attention to, unless there's something, you know, a meteor is heading our way. Mm-hmm. The first is the party of Trump is trying like hell to gut health care for the poor and the weak,
mm-hmm.
and the elderly and the middle class in order to deliver hundreds of billions of dollars in tax cuts to their paymasters. That's a story.
Mm-hmm.
Story number two, Vladimir Putin hacked our election, interfered mm-hmm. with the American election to get Donald Trump and his cronies elected.
Get Hillary Clinton not elected. It's right. Not clear what his motives were, but for sure the chaos. Outcome was the same. Yes.
Number three, Donald Trump and his cronies are pretty clearly stooges of Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
They defer to him. They suck up to him. They sign us things about him. You could put a cannon to their heads and not going to say one bad word about their good buddy Vladimir Putin, or I will deny any knowledge of ever hearing about him or meeting him or visiting Russia until you show them the fucking tape. Then they all suddenly remember, oh, yeah, I had those 9 conversations. Oh, yeah, I was there. Oh, yeah, I ran what Miss Universe contest. And Donald Trump just lies constantly, and so does everyone who works for him. Number four, the party of Trump is so desperate to gut health care, they're willing to look the other way as Vladimir Putin's stooges in the White House wreck your government and lie constantly about everything. And the last story is this.
Well,
the
and I think they want the tax cuts more than the gutting of health care. They just don't want to lose face over the 60
exactly.
votes that they've had on gutting Obamacare.
So they need to pay off their losses with mm-hmm. billions of dollars in tax cuts. And they need to pay off their base by getting rid of the Affordable Care Act. And they're willing to put up with someone who is clearly under the influence of a hostile foreign government to do it mm-hmm. and look mm-hmm. the other way and pretend it's not happening. And most of the press is willing to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, the base of the party. This is the part that no one in the media will talk about, or right. at least talk about for more than 2 seconds. The mm-hmm. base of the party. Tens of millions of our neighbors, of people that we know, people in our families. Tens of millions of our fellow Americans are either too fucked in the head stupid or too in love with the idea of being a member of the American Fascist Party because they are hardwired authoritarians to care about the first 5 things I just talked about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't care. Or they love the idea of being fascists. They've dreamed yep. about it.
They want to be in Trump's army. They want to yeah. be in Mussolini's army, basically. Yeah. 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 They
and
want that, to be are, that. Yep.
And pretty much every story you see coming across the transom, every one of them can be fitted into one of these categories.
Yep.
And they all interrelate to each other. And they are all the fact that the entire Republican Party and the entire Republican Party base are a lost cause.
Let me ask you a question, Audra Klaas.
Sure.
It is clear to me that what happened with this whole wiretapping thing
yeah.
is that Donald Trump woke up on a Saturday morning and read something from Breitbart and got mad
yep.
and tweeted about it. And it was – and what he – well, and then he was tweeting about the Arnold Schwarzenegger show at the same time.
Right.
So it was whatever was
right.
angry about.
He tweeted about wiretapping like
right.
6 times and made it very,
personal against Obama. And, you know, that it was bad and sad and bad dude and bad guy and worse than Watergate and on and on and on. But he was in a frantic state of mind, unsupervised, and reading Breitbart and reading about what's-his-name's radio show the night before that had posited. Not Alex Jones, the other guy, Mark Levin.
Mark Levin. The soothing voice of Mark Levin.
Because
who doesn't want to listen to that?
Right. And Mark Levin then came out, because they did try to nail Mark Levin on this. I'm not Nostradamus.
Yeah, I'm not Nostradamus. You know, I can't predict the future. I'm just telling you.
When he's calmed down, when he's called on it, all of a sudden, he is plausible deniability on the right. Well,
sure.
Look, you're not. And so it's Breitbart and Mark Levin, the president getting agitated. I mean, like you said, crazy agitated on an unsupervised Saturday morning while his daughter is celebrating the Sabbath.
Right.
He's unsupervised and has his phone at 5:55 in the morning and just starts tweeting stuff.
Right.
That's what happened. And at that point, everyone should just say, it's Saturday morning, it's Trump, he's crazy.
Right.
We're done with this story. And by the Sunday shows, it's not an issue anymore. That would be the kind thing to do to Trump. But what has to happen is, and I'm not mad about this, except that my taxpayer dollars are once again going to a meaningless investigation, just like Benghazi, only in this case, the president of the United States is actually responsible for making the charges that are fake, all right?
Right.
And so, but if we had really been willing to tell the truth, look, the president's crazy and he was unsupervised and he shouldn't have had his phone. And, you know, Sean Spicer just walks out and said, look, we tried to take his phone away and we're just not able to do it. And he reads Breitbart and we all know Breitbart's a bunch of lies.
Right.
And so, you know, we just shrug your shoulders and move on. We're going to do other things today. But instead, we 3 weeks later, it's 12 days later. We're still investigating this and he's still keeping the story going. His White House is still keeping the story going. Why can't the media ask the question about Breitbart and Mark Levin? Why can't they make it about that?
Well, they could. I don't think they know how to approach the story because I don't think they're good at this sort of thing.
The mainstream cable news
media.
Yeah,
because okay. their internal gyroscope is always to find some middle parsing ground.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that's always the result.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's – because let's face it. If you've watched the Sunday shows like I have, like you have for the last 12 years – actually longer than that, but I've been writing about them for 12 years. What you see are half the panel and two-thirds of the guests are Republicans. Those Republicans often come on those shows and just fucking lie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just lie. Mm-hmm. They did it during the Bush administration. They did it during the Obama administration. They're doing it now. They just come on and lie.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Chuck Todd have said they don't think it's their job to call their guests out when they lie.
Yeah.
The media has gotten used to just finding the horse race story, finding mm-hmm. that sweet spot that, where they don't have to make any moral judgments or any ethical judgments or any judgments as to factuality. They can just say somebody said one thing and somebody said another. And they're in a whole new world now where mm-hmm. there is an actual pathological liar who lies about crazy shit every day in charge of the nuclear arsenal. And mm-hmm. they are really weirded out by the fact they now have to become – I don't know. I think the word is a fucking journalist
mm-hmm.
and actually approach this problem as the story is not that Donald Trump is tweeting crazy things out. The story is that Donald Trump is crazy
yeah.
and that he surrounds himself with fascist hacks like Sean Spicer who attack them and yell at them for asking questions and stood up there today and read, it seemed like a half an hour, but it was probably 5 or 6 minutes of just clippings that he pulled that I'm sure Donald Trump clipped out of his local paper and
yeah.
stapled together and said, read this shit, read it. And it was just him reading without inflection, without punctuation, one paper, newspaper article that you couldn't even follow it. But one of them mm-hmm. was about Sean Hannity.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire press corps was like rolling their eyes and tapping their toes because the question was really simple. And of course comes this blitz of bullshit mm-hmm. from the White House spokesman. Because mm-hmm. you can't tell the truth. That's the problem. You are mm-hmm. not allowed to tell the truth of what's going on in your own country. And it makes you crazy. So they're not in the truth business. I saw one woman. I don't know her name, but I did see her. I did watch part of this. And she said, basically, please call the New York Times. And Sean yeah. Spicer says, it's my room. I make the calls. And he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
did call on some wingnut crackpot right-wing sure. radio host who was there mm-hmm. on a video feed because he yeah. needed some softball questions. He called
right.
on their Jeff Gannon.
Right.
So
right.
I would love those things to be the story, but they're never going to be the story because, first of all, the press corps doesn't know how to cope with them.
Right. Right.
And secondly, the real story is the president of the United States is out of his fucking mind.
That is the real story.
And
let me ask you one other thing. I sort of entered a fourth dimension today on a Facebook thread where people were. Yeah, Facebook thread. I know. It was in response to a newspaper article where a woman, I think she was in Tennessee or Kentucky, that part of the country, died because her
yes.
Epilepsy drugs, this is in Daily Kos also, Her epilepsy drugs were canceled because she hadn't had a seizure on these epilepsy drugs since 2015. So clearly she was healed, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that the drugs are working. It's that she's over it. So
right. Doesn't need that anymore.
And then she started having seizures because she couldn't get this one medication. Three of the four medications she was on, the companies offered her free samples to get her until she could find a way to... And she's on disability because of epilepsy, and she's not, you know, unable to work because of epilepsy. And on a, anyway, she's 31 years old. She's dead now. So she's not going to be on medication anymore, and she's not going to be a burden to society anymore.
Problem solved, right?
Problem solved.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got upset about that. But the comment thread was, you know, prepare yourself for more of this. And, you know, of course, that got me upset. But then, of course, there's these Wingnut trolls on there who want to talk about in the comment section about a woman dying for lack of medication, want to talk about Donald Trump and how Obama has spied on Donald Trump and how unfair it is.
Right.
And as I'm reading through this and realizing where someone is quoting this, you'll love this, actually, saying, you know, Fox News found three sources that say Obama outsourced the spying to the British government.
Sure.
To hide it. And so it's not, you're not going to find it in the CIA and FBI documents. And so someone actually called that commenter on that and said, look, I've Googled Fox News. I've searched Fox News's webpage. I see nothing on Fox News. I have not seen anything on Fox News about this. I can't find anywhere in their video archive where they said this. I've looked for British, you know, I've searched and searched and searched. Can you give me a link to where Fox News reported that they had three sources about the British thing? And the commenter was there and did reply and say, well, I don't watch Fox News either. I got it from another source.
Yep. Fox News is too liberal.
Fox News is too liberal. But the fact that Alex Jones or WorldNet Daily had said Fox News has these three sources.
Right. Or Gateway Pundit.
Or Gateway Pundit. She was willing to report that with her name on it. Okay?
Sure. It's true.
And I usually don't enter these kind of conversations, but I entered this conversation and I couldn't believe I was typing. You know, maybe WorldNet Daily was lying about Fox News.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, there, now I've just jumped into the total twilight zone, right? We're no longer worried about Bullshit Mountain. We're worried about Barf Mountain lying about Bullshit Mountain. Because lies on top of lies on top of lies. It's now like, no, you don't understand. Fox News is mainstream media.
World
and the war between Breitbart and Fox that we now know about from the primary season, which is Breitbart was behind Trump from the beginning and became the Facebook loci of all of the information that was traveling over these MAGA, between these MAGA types, right?
Yep.
Of, you know, Jeb Bush is weak, Jeb Bush is this, and trashing every other candidate and using Facebook and becoming the news source as long as it was necessary to diss Fox News over and over again as being fake news, mainstream media, lying to you, Fox News is lying to you, and usurping Fox News as the source of true conservatism until the general election. And then it was okay again.
Yeah.
And the flip on a dime of we'll just flip on a dime and be pro Fox again because
you can reprogram
them. It's convenient. You can reprogram them. And who's good at this? The Breitbart people are good at this.
Well, and there's
now Fox News is the enemy again every time they question Trump.
Sure. And that's why the people who are being left out of this equation completely are like the Washington Post and New York Times.
Yeah.
Who I have a problem with.
Yeah,
because the way they do the obsessive both-siderism, that is their that's the real flaw. That's the real flaw in the media is that they cannot they're ideologically, morally, professionally incapable of standing up to actual liars who get up in their face, actual fascists with their teeth bared. They don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're standing. They have a pad and a pen, and they have a directive to report both sides, and that's it. They don't have no tools apparently, other than a giant salary and plenty of perks and benefits. But they have
And the both sides has to be either on the Hill or someone in your media circle.
Well,
it can't, right? I mean,
and this brings me to a very interesting article that someone sent along to me on the Twitter.
Oh.
It's in WGBH Boston, so you know it's legitimate. goodbye, public radio. And it's a major new study shows that political polarization is mainly a right-wing phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Columbia Journalism Review has done this wonderful study showing that Breitbart, Donald Trump supporters clustered around Breitbart and a few like-minded websites such as Daily Caller, Alex Jones, InfoWars.
This is what I was talking about.
Yep,
yeah,
exactly.
I'm sorry. I didn't source it. It is the Columbia Journalism Review article. Yeah, yeah.
And the authors refer to Trickle because they're like, no, liberals go all over the place. They get their information from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Trump stuff was immigration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the Breitbart-led sites were able to push the traditional media into focusing on what Trump wanted to focus on.
Right.
Donald Trump was to talk about immigration and the hordes of terrorists who are sweeping across our border, the crime-ridden cities where you can't go out on the street without getting shot, Hillary Clinton, Benghazi, and email servers. And they forced by dint of volume of pushing them around, because you can push these people around. If you have enough – if you're willing to do it, you can push the mainstream media all over the place. All you need is a big enough, loud enough voice. And they pushed them and pushed them and pushed them to cover the stories that they wanted covered the way they wanted them covered on their ground. Now, here's the problem. This is a perfect summary of everything that's wrong with the mainstream media. Washington Post media columnist Margaret Sullivan wrote about the study earlier, recalled talking with a Trump voter in Pennsylvania who said she didn't support Clinton because I don't like how she stole those emails and got people killed in Benghazi. A perfect storm of misinformation. But Ms. Sullivan's prescription is there's another way that the traditional press has allowed the right-wing media to flourish by moving too far to the left itself. This is the Andrew Sullivan lie.
Oh,
that
my God.
The reason they're all crazy on the right is that they'll find the center. And I just want to grab these people by the lapels in person once and demand to know, what the fuck is your problem? But I know what their problem is. Their problem is, if I say the Republican Party is the problem, I won't get to be the Washington Post media columnist anymore.
Right, right.
Because
right.
I will be out on my ass, because you are not allowed to tell the truth in the media. And our enemies know that.
Yep.
The people on the right now have figured out they can do whatever the fuck they want. And there'll be a few people standing with a few ancient weapons in their path. There'll be Chris Hayes every now and then, and Joanne Reed and the good Dr. Maddow will stand on their path. But pretty much the rest of the media, they can run over them.
And this is acknowledged. I actually was thinking at some point of trying to have time to grab enough clips to do this, which is – on these panels, you hear it almost every time that you're talking about Trump voters, which is that mention of the 40% or the 44%. Well, you know, those core Trump voters, they won't change their mind.
Right.
Now, and it's acknowledged on these panels, on these CNN panels, that
fact of life.
No, that 44%, they won't change their mind. But, the rest of the voters, the ones that are calling their congressmen, they're really going to be upset. There's a constituency for the National Endowment for the Arts.
Sure.
Because there's theater companies, and these mayors like having an opera company in their city, and they like having a theater company in their city, and it brings tourism, and it brings a certain panache. And so, there's going to be phone calls, and people are going to get pressure from they're going to care about the theater in their district, right? They're going to care about that, and they're going to vote a certain way to protect the funding for that. But those 44% of Trump voters, they're going to like Trump no matter what they do. But it's always brought up as a sort of it's the wart on our politics that you mention and you wouldn't deny that it exists, but you're going to gloss right over it and move on to talk.
It's like a meteorological fact. You can't change it. It's 60 votes in Congress. You know you need 60 votes in the Senate.
Right.
It's just
no. You know who knows that? Rand Paul.
It's McConnell.
Yeah, well, and Mitch McConnell.
The reason that we don't talk about the fact that 39 or 40 or 42% or whatever is, and the reason that Matthew Dowd gets all frantic to parse Trump voters from Trump fans, and why there's this obsession, it's like phrenology, this fake pseudoscience of subdividing Trump voters into people who I can actually reason with versus all those other bad people. Look, right. The same people who are singing little songs about the deliciousness of libtard tears and we want lost right now are the same fucking people who were reveling in every fake Clinton administration scandal that came along, who were absolutely blind and poo-pooed every little thing, that every bad thing that the Bush administration did. They're the same miserable shitbags who gobbled up every Obama administration scandal for 8 years. That they're the same people. They're exactly the same people.
They believe Fast and Furious really happened. Yep.
But they have, and nobody in the profession of the media wants to drill into this well and see the kind of toxic sludge that is sloshing around in the skulls of these people, because then they'd have to talk about it. And these people are the people who buy the dick pills and the reverse mortgages.
Well, that's the impression, Driftglass, that people have. Well,
I do impressions.
The impression is that these are the people buying the dick pills. And I think I don't think they are the people that are buying the dick pills. I think it's just the impression of advertisers who haven't yet sunk to the point of, that anti-Trump dollar is a good dollar, but we don't want our news programming to be perceived as being liberal. Because if it's perceived as being anti-Trump voter, then that's going to hurt the advertising dollar. And I think the upstairs suits in the cable news industry don't want to do anything because, like you said, they're on autopilot. And? They're on autopilot with both sides. They're on autopilot with we don't want to offend anyone. Let's face it, the right has done a really good job of working the refs.
Yes, they have.
To the point that the media is just pussy whipped about it. And they really are.
And you can hear a story about how there's no courage on the right because they don't want to offend Trump voters because, we don't want to stand up to them. But that never translates up the food chain. Like, wait a minute. If these people are holding an entire political party hostage and they're crazy, then the leadership of that party is crazy. Then the people who pander to them are also evil or crazy. But that gets to people that you, Chris Matthews, know personally. That gets to people who come to your party and give to your charity. And we don't want to talk about the fact that those nice, smiling, happy people that are coming to your cocktail party are fascists. And they're there because they have an entire political party at their back who are terrible people and who are wrecking this country. And we can't say that out loud because someone higher up the food chain, for whatever reason, doesn't want that said. Period. Right. And can I just mention how Sean...
Well, the one person who will say it, and yet they will not put her on the air like they did Jon Stewart because of gender, is Samantha Bee. She will say, look at this pussy, and it's Paul Ryan not standing up to Steve King, saying, I hope he misspoke.
Yeah.
And then he goes on every other cable show, and Steve King said, no, I meant exactly what I said. We need white supremacy in this country. We need to have white babies. And as I wrote added to posts at Crooks and Liars, which is, this is the old 19th century argument that Teddy Roosevelt made about Italians, okay? Now it's Muslims. Muslims are moving in and they're taking over white America and they're bringing this foreign culture, and the superior white Christian culture is going to be sullied and America will be different from what it is.
Yeah.
And it will be less moral. It will be less truly American and have less of a what's the word Steve King gets? He says civilization.
Right.
He says English is the civilization, is the language of civilization. That's what Steve King says. And that argument was made by Teddy Roosevelt in 1903 to 1909, saying white women, what he means by white is English and Irish and Protestant.
Right.
Need to have more babies because we have all these Italian Catholic immigrants coming in. And they are have more fecundity, they have more children than white, and what they mean by white is Protestant. And it's going to destroy what we know to be moral about America, the real American is a Puritan Protestant English background, and if we change that complexion, which is the word 150 years before that, that Benjamin Franklin used. Because
about the damn Germans. The goddamn Germans.
Germans who were moving into Philadelphia. It's always the same thing. We are here. We are the ones who are the real Americans. We are locking the barn door because the horse is back in the stable. We're going to lock it and not let anybody else in.
Well, and,
it's always the same argument. Excuse me, it's just always the same argument. They don't speak English. They're not true Christians. They have a different skin color than we do.
Yeah, they smell
Benjamin
bad.
Benjamin Franklin said that about Germans, that their complexion was not the same as we English.
And they'll never assimilate.
Those Germans will never assimilate. Those Irish will never assimilate. Those Italians will never assimilate. Those Muslim immigrants, those third world Muslim immigrants will never, those Mexicans will never assimilate.
Well,
and we never were, the one group we never worried about assimilation with, African Americans.
Right.
Dragged over here in chains.
Because
they didn't have to assimilate.
They were property.
No. And this is the argument that is in Chris Hayes' new book, by the way, which is because at that point, the reason that police treat African-Americans differently today has everything to do with how the forebearers got here.
They were immigrants.
They treat them differently because they're not immigrants.
Ben Carson says they were immigrants who just wanted to make a better life for themselves.
We're getting to the 59-minute mark, so you want to say something else.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm not going to do David Brooks, and there's about 10 other stories we should talk about, including Sean Spicer.
Rachel Maddow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, Sean Spicer, I just want to skip over Rachel Maddow because I don't really care. I think it was a mistake, but it wasn't an insurmountable one. I think we have so few players on the field now that when one of them makes a mistake, everybody freaks out. But you know what? Donald Trump obligingly came along and put his big fat bazoo in the middle of the news again, and now we're back to talking about it. The reason that Donald Trump still hasn't asked anyone in the intelligence community whether or not his bullshit is true is Sean Spicer says, because then you people in the media will attack us and say that we're trying to interfere with this, and so we're not even going to ask him. We're not going to ask the FBI or the CIA or anybody else in the intelligence community if any of our bullshit is actually true, because if we even ask them, you'll blame us for interfering, and we're just better than that. And like, fuck you. Wow. You know, you want to start saving money in the federal budget? I can think of about 20 positions in the White House that need to be cut immediately. The entire cabinet, the president and vice president, and Sean fucking Spicer needs to go. Now, he's vastly entertaining. I'm not going to lie. Watching a man set fire to his career in front of you is weirdly entertaining. But this brings us back to the theme of our show, which is several weeks ago, I remember Nicole Wallace of McCain Palin fame, and now she is a paid MSNBC contributor, was wringing her hands over the state of her party, and it sounded for all the world like a liberal blogger 10 years ago. Oh my God, they're crazy. Oh my God, they're awful, et cetera, et cetera. They're doing terrible things, et cetera. But she said, but of course you can't blame the voters. You can't blame the voters. and believe me, that is such a reflex action of everyone on television, everybody in retail, everyone on television, which is basically a retail business, everyone in politics. You can't blame the voters, for God's sakes. You can't call them stupid. So you have to find out what's wrong with them, what they're feeling, what they're afraid of, what they're sensing. This is exactly wrong. I don't have to run anybody for anything, and I don't have to appeal to conservative voters. But this is exactly wrong. You definitely need to blame the voters. And we need to do it in a hurry, because they're going to slip away. Once Trump sets the place on fire, they will do exactly what they did with Bush. They'll put on funny hats, slip away in the night, and pretend they never heard of Trump. Because here's the thing, fellow liberals, and especially to the people at MSNBC who I know listen to this podcast, understanding conservatism and conservatives and the base voter is not that hard. But accepting what you come to find to be true is very hard. Because what you have to do is accept the fact that you're a liberal. Liberals believe in facts, and we believe in history, and we believe in reality, and we believe in compassion. And what you will find if you examine the history of conservatism in this country, even briefly, and if you just talk to conservative voters about what they value and what they're afraid of and what they have really done in the past, not done and voted for and cheered on, is you find people who value illogic, lies, and sadism, who are cruel, who are basically really cruel, heartless, mean, ignorant assholes who are completely okay with the government taking care of them personally and people they know personally, but everyone else can go hang. And once you, it's really hard for liberals to accept the fact there's no reaching those people. There's no accommodation between the two of us because our basic views of human nature and the purpose of government and what you should do as a human being on this earth are radically different. I believe we should help people. Paul Ryan thinks we should let them die. Mm-hmm. That's really it. That if you're a poor or working class person and you need some government help just to survive and get you through and get yourself back on your feet and feed your family, just like Paul Ryan got, fuck you, perish, you moocher scum. My rich friend needs a tax cut. And he won't say that out loud, but that is exactly what the conservative philosophy is. And we have to accept the fact that they're members of a cult, and you don't – cult members just don't leave spontaneously. Yep. They find more and more bizarre reasons to stay. And that's the world we live in now. Anyway, by the way, watch Legion. It's an awesome show.
Oh, we love Legion.
It's an awesome show.
Yeah. You need to binge watch that from the beginning. Don't try to catch
don't
up.
Skim.
You have to start. No, yeah. it's a series.
It's
so,
a series.
And there's one episode that you're, I think it's episode 3, you're going to feel a little lost. Stick with it.
Yeah, stick with it.
That episode is important to the future episodes. So I know there's a certain set of build up. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Ayanto Jones. The fact that she is female did not stop our correspondent from naming her after their favorite Torchwood character. Oh. And their Ayanto Jones is just adorable. You can visit Ayanto at our website or Facebook page, and you can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. And yes, it is true, the change in the way Amazon is calculating our cut from the link at our website has dramatically dropped the amount of money we're going to get from Amazon every month. So by more than half. So good for Amazon. I'm sure that they figured out that they were paying too much. And so we need you to shop Amazon. If that's something you do, please continue to do that. And we appreciate it. And if not, then please send us a check or go to PayPal and support our show.
And we're trying really hard to keep the show ad-free, other than, of course...
Except for our regular...
Triffitt's Flowers and MacGuffin's Muffins.
Triffitt's Flowers and MacGuffin's Muffins.
But they're really our family, aren't they? I mean, really.
They're part of the Cornfield Resistance family.
Yeah, they really are.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. I don't want anyone here to think that $5 is not going to count toward anything. If you send $5 and that's all you ever send, that makes a difference to our ability to pay our electric bill, pay for our kids' prescription copays, to fix our sink. That was the thing. We did have a very nice response when we had to get a new furnace, and the furnace is almost all paid off. Really had a big response to that, and some people sent some incredibly generous checks, and we're so grateful. And then, but then we had to have shocks and struts put on the minivan.
Just like you guys.
And today we had to have a plumber come, and that was a paycheck, just sort of out the door. These things happen.
This is life.
We are homeowners.
This is
and we
absolutely
have a car,
just,
and yeah,
same thing.
It's
same thing happens at your house.
We're very grateful and we're very blessed, Sure. But I just want everybody to realize when you get emails from people asking for $3, and when you get these things and all these things come in the mail, when I say 1% donate to our podcast, that's actually typical for charities to get a 1 or 2% response to a request for money. And so when you send, I always say, $5. We are so amazingly grateful for those people who were able to and sent more, especially for our furnace, which, like I said, that is no longer a financial burden in the back of my mind. We will get that paid off. But $5 makes a difference. And if everyone who listens to this podcast sent us $5, we could retire.
Sure. Actually, we could.
So that's not going to happen.
No more podcasts.
But believe me, people that fundraise and get a 2% response and get that up to a 2.5% response, get a bonus. You know, those are margins that people are living in charity. So we are just very grateful to you. Don't send us anything if you're going to miss lunch over it. But if you have never given before, maybe give up not donating to our podcast for Lent. That'd be nice.
It's not too late.
It's not too late. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter or other social media. If you can do that, we really appreciate it. Hey, DriftQuest, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties think it's hilarious watching Sean Spicer trying to bury one more turd in the overflowing White House litter box.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2017, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.